You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Yeah, you know, it's like I was telling you earlier, this is really cool because one of the best kept secrets in Hawaii has always been, hey, where do you find corner crab? Everybody loves them. Not everybody knows how to catch them. Not anybody knows how to, what to do with them. And it just dawned on us a while ago, and we've actually been learning at the council for a few years, that, hey, there might be a whole nother cross-section of marine economy out here. I mean, it's, and we're going to learn about this. My friend Marlo Saboteur is with the council, and we get him here as often as we can. He's the Island Fisheries Ecosystem Scientist. And we've got him here in advance of some stuff that's going on here in the month of June, coming up in the month of June with regards to a lot of things in his milieu, but particularly the corner crab status. That's kind of a long introduction. For those that don't know, first, Marlo, how long have you been with the council now?
Close to 9 years.
And you came originally from Guam and...
No, American Samoa.
American Samoa, that's right.
Yep.
And did you think when you did that it was going to be that you're going to be here that long?
No, I'm surprised now that you ask me. It's like I had to count in my head that it's been 9 years.
And that's, I think, when we met in the very beginning. And we've seen so many things happen in the council. And I got to brag because we've always maintained that the council was a bottom-up organization. And people like yourself are proof of that. I mean, here you came from far at the far reaches of the council to right in the heart of it, being a real decision maker. What led you into the area of the scientist that you are about the ecosystem and how it deals with the fishery?
Well, I've always fascinated by the ocean and the and I've been doing a lot of dives before in my previous jobs, and fascinated with the coral reef, and now I'm more interested in the dynamics in the fisheries.
Yeah, because I do know one thing that I've learned in all the talks that we've had over the years, and that is, it's way more than just people catching stuff. I mean, you know, if the environment around a certain area isn't conducive to growth or reproduction, whatever was there is going to be gone, whether we're fishing or not.
That's correct. Yeah. I mean, we're subject, the fisheries and the stock is subject to a much broader scale factors rather than just fishing.
I bet it must have been it was an exercise in observation for me. They're finally figuring out when they're up in places like up in Manoa or Tantalus, and they're worried about things going into the streams. Well, that has a big impact down at the bottom where you guys do your work, doesn't it?
Of course. Yeah. And it's interconnected. I mean, in the Hawaiian culture, we know that. Mm. The land is connected to the ocean, and there's that continuity, including impacts are also continuous.
But the thing that I did learn, and I think that what makes people like you tick, and what makes what I do interesting for me, is that no matter how bad we've screwed something up, if you identify the problem, Mother Nature can be very forgiving, and you can turn something around. And we are doing that in some areas where you work.
That's correct. I mean, we have to know what that certain threshold is, mm-hmm. and not go beyond that threshold, and which is something that we just recently included in the recent stock assessment that mm-hmm. for Kona crabs, is that we found out that the stock for Kona crab is actually very healthy.
Yeah, and you know, when we talk about that, gang, when they say very healthy, to you and I, it means there's lots of them, you know, and maybe it's because they're not the easiest things to find and catch, and there are not that many people doing them.
That is correct. I mean, the fishery now has shrunk into very small, into a very small commercial fishery. For example, the state of Hawaii, just last year, have recorded like I think 22 people with commercial fishing license reported.
That's so few. Yeah,
that is very few, and which is surprising. But with such a healthy resource, how come the fishery has collapsed so bad?
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that. That's because Marlo just said it's not because of the stock. Usually, what happens when one of these things goes, whether it be a quota base or where you're just decimating a species and you put the brakes on it, like no fishing in Waikiki for a year. In a year, the whole place doesn't come back to be beautiful and bountiful. But what it looks like is, we don't even know how many people are catching these things recreationally, right?
Right. We have no. We don't have a good handle on how big is the the non-commercial fishery for Kona crab. So those that just go out, drop their loop nets, and bring it back for home consumption or personal consumption.
I have no idea.
Or giving it out to the communities. We have no idea.
One thing I would say that because of the intensive way, it needs a lot of gear. If there were a lot of people doing it on a regular basis, some of the commercial guys would know who they are. So, and it's at this point in time, it's not a matter of honesty or dishonesty or anything else. But when you talk about a site and a stock assessment, what are we talking about? How do we gather that information?
Well, we the Science Center is the one in charge of developing stock assessments, and they used available data from the Division of Aquatic Resources from their fisher reporting system. Those are the data that the fishermen report. This is only for the commercial sector. Yeah.
Okay, I got a lot that we're going to cover with Malloy. With Marlowe. We call him Malloy too. But one of the things that we have to back up and explain this very unique animal, this Kona crab. We call it a Kona crab, I guess, because originally they caught them off Kona, so they were the Kona crab. But what is it? What makes them sort of special? And how desirable are they as a food source?
Yeah, so Kona crabs are a pantropical demersal crab species that loves to hang out in coarse, clean, sandy bottom areas. Mm-hmm. And I think in Australia they call it spanner crabs because of the their claws look like what they call a spanner.
Yeah, which is a wrench back in the day.
Which is a wrench, basically. And so they're found in the tropics in deep areas, but they can also be the young ones, the small juveniles are also found. Yeah. In shallow areas, it was reported that, somewhere in Kaneohe, the sand flats over there, even Electric Beach, you can find, these crabs that were just the eye stalk,
being said, for those that don't know, you can go look at this and go Google it and everything, but in your observation so far, what is, when you say small and what is big?
Well, They can grow up to like how big is this?
About 9 inches maybe.
Yeah, and
that's the length.
And then the juvenile ones are probably like maybe there's a 4-inch minimum size I think for the state.
And the meat is located primarily in the pinchers and in the legs.
Well, there's some in the pinchers, but the big meat is actually in the body.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is, by the way, different than many of the others. A lot of people love shellfish because it cooks so well. And what we've seen with these Kona crab, of course, a lot of people eat them raw. I mean, it's a very big source of protein. But they also cook up pretty nice, and they look spectacular.
Yeah. I mean, even if they're, even if they're not cooked yet, they're still alive. They look like they're cooked.
Yeah, that's right. because of the color. But boy, they light up a pot. And basically, when you said that they're caught with hook and eye, people got to know that if you see, like, we have the guys from Wicked Tuna on the show next week again, by the way. Tyler's going to be with us, I think. We're going to talk about that. We also talk about the Deadliest Catch guys. And when we see those pots coming up with these huge, big crabs, you think, well, that makes a lot of sense. But not everybody wants to eat that big, huge crab. Somebody prefers that little thing.
Right, yeah. Right. And the fishery in Hawaii is different because we're using, the fishery in Australia uses traps.
Mm-hmm. Wait a minute, that's what I'm getting at, gang. I was trying to lead him into this, saying, we see those pots going over and the retrieval and the gear that it's needed. That's not happening in the Kona crab fishery here in Hawaii. And I'm not sure why, but you obviously have a chance to look at the gear. Explain the gear and explain why it seems to be, for the very few commercial guys there are, why it seems to be the gear of choice.
Well, it's a different type of gear. So the gear looks like a ring that has, if you guys know what a dream catcher is, like those Native American instruments.
Right, that hang.
Hangs on ceilings or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it looks like that. It's got a ring, maybe 3 or 4 feet across, and
it's a mesh net. That's
mesh
in
net,
there, right?
Right.
And it is not with a puka. It's flat.
It's flat, then because Kona crabs has a lot of spines, they get tangled on those nets.
Yeah, and what it is, gang, is there's 3 or 4 cords coming up from the ring, to the collection point where they get picked. And we're going to talk about how they get deployed and how they work. But it is pretty labor intensive. It's not like, I think in the crab pots that we look at on the Dangerous Catch, they're taking and putting, you know, like either whole fish or big things in because it's a one-way deal.
Right.
And this thing, you've told me some things that are fascinating about the observation when these nets are set. How deep in the water generally are the commercial nets?
Commercial nets go around maybe 300 meters to 400. But as long as you're in a sandy bottom habitat and you know, unlike those industrialized fisheries that has like a motor that hauls the whole crab trap up.
This is
just by hand.
Yeah.
And so you can't deploy a heavy gear or as far as I know, some people use like a string of like 25 rings.
Right.
And it's very inefficient because you're just hoping that the crab would, you know, step onto the net.
Right. And not fall off on the way up, by the way.
And not fall off on the way up and not get eaten by whatever predator
that's in there. You know, here's what you need to get, gang. Sometimes some animals, depending on where you put these ring nets, they just get caught by themselves. But most of these things, from what I understand, they're actually either affixing to or tying to a piece of bait of some kind.
Right.
What's the bait of choice?
I think they're using some mackerel bait or some tuna bait. It's a fish bait. And,
Sometimes they use the saba, the sama. I mean, but basically they'll use whatever they can get. Sometimes they'll just use aku heads or, you know, palu.
And so you tie the bait right in the middle of the the middle of the ring, and then
and then you watch the crab come
Come in. So Poseidon Fisheries Research, who is helping us with this project, deployed GoPro cameras on those on those rings, and we've seen tiger sharks come in.
Yeah,
and they're actually eating the bait, but not eating the
crab. I was going to say, you know what? The crabs get off easy. The shark comes in and obviously ruins the net and just bites the thing and eats the bait, right?
Right.
And then it goes away. Why? What does science tell you, or what have you heard anecdotally from others? Do the sharks just decide they don't want to eat a crab?
Well, it really depends on preference, I guess, by the shark. I don't know what this is a tiger shark, by the way, it eats probably everything, but it seemed like from their point of view, like you know, an orange thing with a pincher.
Maybe not too appetizing. To me, I think it's fascinating because what Marlo's talking about here, gang, is if you have a crab, you know, you see the guys on the bridge, by the way, catching Samoan crab or 7-Eleven or whatever. They're catching them off the bridge. Same net. It's the same ring, the, you know, galvanized ring with the 3-4 feet across and the pickup. But that's easy because they're just hanging there, right? Or they go put them out. How come, did the crab get away? Can they get away?
It does. Yeah. I mean, what's really interesting from this study is that, you know, you can see actually crabs just walking over the net and not getting tangled.
Yeah.
And also on the way up, there are some crabs that fall off. So
that's kill fight. You know, the fishery, you caught the thing and now you lose it.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So the fishery is like the gear is inefficient and it's kind of hard to say that there's over exploitation of this resource. And so going back to the stock assessment, the Science Center generated this assessment, and the council will be taking action on this new assessment, and which would result in a higher catch limit in June.
Okay, so and we're going to be talking more about this June number for a reason in a bit. But see, so if you get the idea, is you can see the big boats up in the Bering Straits, they're throwing these things. And they're all connected, hundreds of these things. So what Malloy is saying is a typical string of corner crab nets might be 25 pieces, and maybe a boat has several of them. They certainly aren't anchoring them.
Right.
Or if they do, they have to still stay there because it's in, for them, that's deep water.
Right. And there's also a float where, you know, you can grab the line and then to haul it back.
So right.
By the time you finish laying down the whole string, you have to circle back.
And pick it up. Yeah.
Because you can't let it soak too long because, one, they get preyed upon by, from what we found out in this research, by a puffer fish.
Yeah, that's amazing, yeah.
And
yeah.
also I know eagle rays.
But also, some of the fish, it may be some of the predators are not comfortable at that depth.
Right. You know, right.
And certainly also, not a pelagic.
Yeah. You know, yeah. So, so you can't have too many crabs in one hole. So it's a labor intensive fishery.
Okay. So typically speaking, in the this set is 25 nets or so. It doesn't behoove a small boat to have more than one. They set it, they go to the other end, they pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
And typically, what does your research tell you is, you know, when you talk about soak time, it's not very long.
Not very long.
Do they turn around and deploy them again right away?
Yeah. And
if there's crab.
If there's crab in there. And typical run for or one haul is maybe 25 minutes soak time.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's based on the people that we worked with, the fishermen.
Okay, is the fishing done during the daytime, nighttime, or both?
It's nighttime. Daytime, sorry. Yeah. It's a daytime fishery.
Yeah, you need to be able to find the gear. Typically speaking, the commercial guys that are out there, you say it's only a couple dozen. I mean, you know, it's not very many of them.
Yep.
What size boats? Small boats, I'm guessing.
These are small boats. Yeah. And, you know, typically this Kona crab fishing is also tied with bottom fishing.
Yeah, yeah, it's cultural too, by the way. Yeah.
And so people that go bottom fishing would bring, Kona crab nets with them. And if the fish is not biting, the bottom fish is not biting, they will deploy the crab nets.
I actually know guys that do it a little bit differently. They're bottom fishermen and corner crab guys, a few of them. And what they'll do is they'll go to bottom, and the fish coming up will be too small or undesirable. Well, not when you can tie a knot on it and put it on your Kona crab net and send it right back down again.
Because
whatever is down there wants to eat that. Typically, anecdotally, when you talk to some of these guys, are there times when there's really plenty?
Yeah, there's seasonal variation in terms of abundance. Mm-hmm. There are certain times where they just don't go onto the nets. And there are certain times where like your haul is like full of or there's a lot of crabs, so it's probably tied to the mating season and when they're buried with eggs. But there's a seasonal closure and that's the second regulation
And by the way, we're going to take a look at that. On that, it's not necessarily the same as the ulupapa or the spiny lobster. But it's similar. In the mating must be the similar for all of these crustaceans, must be the R months or whatever. Which way it works. What work did you do to compile the report that's going to be presented in June that's going to help people make decisions about this fishery, about what's going to happen with the future of corner crabbing?
So, like I said before, the Science Center generated the stock assessment for corner crab that showed that the stock is not overfished. And it's not experiencing overfishing. There's a 1.6% probability that the stock may be overfished.
Mm-hmm.
Only 1.6%.
Yeah, that's a pretty even.
Very low probability that the stock will be overfished. And also a 0% probability of overfishing happening because there's nobody fishing for them.
Now, obviously, they have predators. And I would imagine that the closer, the shallower the water, the more predation there is. But basically speaking, we're talking about apex. We must be talking about some pretty big predators that can go down and be able to find them.
Well, what's really surprising to us when Poseidon Fisheries Research deployed those cameras is that it's not actually a huge predator. I mean, we didn't see any ulua preying on the Kona crab. It's actually a puffer fish and an eagle ray. We were thinking sharks.
I was going to say.
Or big jacks.
However, it's not as though they're visibly abundantly easy to find, is it?
Yes, because they spend a lot of their time
under the sand.
Yeah.
And what you're saying is sometimes you just see the eyes.
Yep, the eye stalk is out because I think they're also an ambush predator.
Mm-hmm.
So
basically what you're saying is, gang, you got to get this straight in case you want to try it. I'm sure there's some pretty good ways you can find out from your favorite fishing supply about the nets, how to do them, how to tie them, how to put them together in a string, and then how to affix the bait and what to expect. But what about after the catch? How do they maintain the fish? What condition do they need the crab to be in when they're fishing?
Most people prefer to have the crab intact.
right,
and all the
keep
all
them alive
the
as
arms
much as you
and pinchers, because right. This guy is spoil easy.
Yeah,
you know, it doesn't have a long shelf life. So once you grab them, you know, you can cook them immediately
right.
and then store them, but not store them fresh.
Mm-hmm.
They don't last that long. And another interesting bit about the research that Poseidon Fisheries Research did was they discovered that you know, Kona crabs are known to bleed out and die if you lose a limb or even
that's
partial
amazing,
limb.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Apparently in Hawaii they survive.
Yeah, and I tell you, when I first saw evidence of that, when some people brought some pretty interesting video showing these adults that were missing limbs, but they were alive.
Yep.
You know, and not recently missing limbs. They lost them a while
right.
back.
And what's amazing is that we've got photo evidence that this lost limbs are actually growing back.
Wow.
They're regrowing. Even the pinchers.
Wow.
They're regenerating their pinchers.
Well, what about this? I know this question comes up, and that is, we know that certain times bottom fishery and this is why we have to have in the BRFAs and sometimes these regulations. When you bring a fish up from depth, it's a dead fish. I mean, you know, it's not going to survive, you know, depending on how you bring them up. They will embolize. They'll die. What about the crabs? From what I understand, that doesn't happen to the crabs.
It doesn't happen to the crabs because these guys don't have a swim bladder.
Mm-hmm.
So if you throw them back, and we actually attempted to document it the crab going down using a camera and... they're not being preyed upon by jacks or kahalas or uluas on the way down. They make it safe down at the bottom and then bury themselves.
Yeah, and say, I don't want to eat those things again when the next time I see them. but that being said, and so obviously most of these boats, even though they're small, they've got to have ikimau, they've got to have, you know, a circulatory to keep them as long as they can from banging around too much.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine also... high speed running, and that is counterproductive because you're going to bust these things up by just banging them against each other.
Yeah. So
what's a good catch?
What's a good what?
What's a good catch for some of these small boats?
Well, on average per trip, I think they're catching like around maybe 60 to 80 pounds.
Yeah, I'm saying it's labor intensive.
Yeah,
for what it is.
And then so it's interesting, this fishery, and it has shrunk so small. There's not a lot of there's not a big commercial fishery for them. It's simply because one, it's hard labor.
Yeah.
Second is you know, the traditional knowledge on fishing for these crabs are going away with the older fishermen.
Yeah. Well, see, here's another issue. And I learned this from a couple of the restaurant people that we all talk to on a regular basis. If you can guarantee somebody a supply, get them on the menu and get a reputation, that's one thing. But a lot of times these restaurants will count on this fisherman. And this fisherman decides, well, the water's been kind of, you know, I don't want to go. It's too rough. And so now they got a customer that can't get their Kona crab.
Right.
So I'm expecting, do you think that in June, when this is presented, that there will be either some new or some renewed interest in expanding the fishery?
I hope so. I mean, this is a fishery stock that's hardly exploited. And there's a potential for the fishery to develop for Kona crabs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd rather see Kona crabs in the Chinatown, like you know, those tanks with water.
Yeah, of course. Instead, you bet.
Instead of you know, Maine lobsters or whatever.
Yeah.
And there's a potential fishery for this stock, and the council will be taking action on changing the catch limit. Right now, it's only 3,500 pounds because the available.
Okay, wait. Let's make sure, gang, if you're listening, I'm going to ask Marlo to tell us this limit that they're talking about. What is it based on? Where's the information collected? And when would that activity stop at the end of at a time? So if you have a catch limit, say 1,000 pounds, you're going to get the information from the.
The dealer report, the fisher reporting system from the Division of Aquatic Resources.
Right, and so that gives you how many have been caught this season so far.
Right.
So they're like anything else, when there's a limit, there's a day that the fishing for that is cut off.
That's correct.
But right now, is there?
There is. Mm-hmm. The current annual catch limit is 3,500 pounds based on the old information.
Mm-hmm.
But the new information shows with the new research and the new model that was used that the maximum sustainable yield, which is the, you know, highest level of catch on a long term that can sustain the fishery without impacting the stock, is actually somewhere around 70,000, 79,000 pounds, compared to a 3,500 pounds.
So it means that if you get into this correctly, you're going to be, if you can find this animal, you're going to be able to make a living. And I think that what Marlo and I are talking about today is that to re-encourage or reignite somebody to be interested in it, there has to be the dangling of the carrot at the end of the run saying, this is what you can strive for. This is what the market's going to support.
Right. Yeah. And right now the market is wide open. There's not a lot of people selling, selling Kona crabs. People are looking for it.
Yeah.
There's
people that want to, I know people will buy it from me today.
Right.
They just can't get them. But there's another thing. And that might be that some of these people that are catching them recreationally, it would be nice to know what they're catching, because it would even probably support even more development. Maybe some of these people that are catching for holo holo can turn around and make some money, get a license and sell some.
Yep. So that MSY, or maximum sustainable yield, that I mentioned earlier of 79,000 pounds or so, is both for recreational and for
the total,
commercial.
Right, right.
If you only look at the commercial component to that, it was calculated to be somewhere around maybe 30 to 33,000 pounds.
Yeah.
So it's half-half kind of thing. And we would be interested to know what the recreational or the non-commercial component of this fishery is, because right now we don't have any idea.
Yeah, and so, gang, what that means to me, so we can help, and one of the reasons I love having Marlo in here, and one of the other reasons why we so love the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council, for being one of the sponsors of this program, so that we can bring you this stuff. Because here's an opportunity. And what I'm hoping is that some of these guys that maybe they had a son or an uncle, or I mean a nephew or somebody that decided, I don't want to do it, before we lose their ability and lose their ability, not their ability, but their techniques, that people want to pass it on, but they got to pass, they need to know that somebody's really going to do it.
That is correct. Yeah. And one of the problems that we also see in this fishery is that it's very restricted. It's over-regulated because of layers upon layers of regulation on this stock. And one of the biggest impediment to develop the fishery, and you mentioned a carrot on a stick, right?
Yeah.
You can't have that carrot on that stick, because the state legislature put in 2000, I think it's somewhere around in 2006 or 2007, a prohibition on the retention of female Kona crab.
Yeah, which makes it very difficult.
And if you're a commercial fisherman, you catch male and female crabs.
Yeah.
And our estimate of the ratio between males and females is 50-50.
Yeah.
So you get to throw away 50% of your catch.
I was going to say, what you're doing is you're throwing away 50% of your catch. And that's not of appeal. The reason why we wanted to start this whole thing in the first place was to let you know how unique this animal is. I mean, for those that don't know, and maybe we didn't really explain this in the beginning of the segment, I want to make sure that we finish up with this, and that is, these are pretty special, and I'm not sure that they're available in too many places. What makes Kona crab so individual to... Is it just because of the big distance between the main Hawaiian islands and the rest of the islands in the Pacific? That they don't travel well? What makes it so unique?
Well, Kona crabs is a pan-Pacific stock. And, what's really driving the distribution is the amount of habitat it has. It likes clean, coarse sand areas. That's the reason why Penguin Banks is one of the primary fishing spots. And because you got a huge sand flat on top of the banks, and you've got a couple of them, but we're an island, right? Mm-hmm. With no continental shelf, so we're limited by the habitat.
Yeah.
And this is a unique fishery. Knowledge needs to be passed on from generations to generation, and not a lot. Like I said, it's a hard labor fishery. And
there's another thing, though. Let's make sure, Marlo, that we touch on this, and that is, if it's not caught, it's not that it's going to exponentially grow and grow and grow and grow and multiply, because it too is limited to what is available for it to consume.
That's right. You know? So habitat is a limiting factor, so you can't have like an overflowing population of crabs because you don't have enough space to hold everything.
But also the rest of your hat comes on, and in order to have a good corner crab fishery, you have to have a good environment, a good environment for them to live in. In other words, if we started making that sand dirty or full of things, the corner crab would be gone in a heartbeat.
Right. Yeah. So you'd notice, you'll see these small crabs in areas that has clean areas, clean sandy areas. And that's why people are reporting it in Kaneohe Bay as well as Electric Beach, because there's, very, very little runoff or freshwater input in those areas.
Yeah, and boy, I tell you, that can turn around in no time. All you need is one Mauka development, right?
With all
kinds of stuff going to the sea.
Yeah.
Okay, now that being said, one of the reasons why we wanted to talk to Marlo 2 weeks in a row, we'll be back again next week, but this was because we're going to highlight the release of this information in June. And that's the second time we said it. What exactly is happening in this series of meetings, and at what point in time will the corner crab fishery be discussed?
So the council meeting is going to be held in June, starting on the 25th, I believe, 25th to the 27th. And the council will be taking action on changing the catch limit for corner crabs.
Yeah.
And the council will be presented with options, and they get to choose which catch limit they want to use for the corner crab fishery.
Yeah.
And with this significant increase in the catch limit due to the new information, due to the new science that was generated,
I think I hope it's going to be enticing people to come and meet and look.
Yep. Yeah, we're hoping that it revitalized the fishery. And also we request that the state of Hawaii to reconsider this no take of female, because it's limiting the growth of the fishery, which, it's very evidential that, the collapse, the decrease in catch and the decrease in fishing effort and fishing participants was due to that no take of female.
What is the differentiation for people that are strictly casual fishing? How do you tell the males and females apart?
Males typically have a, a narrow...
carpus, or what do they call it?
This thing at the bottom.
The
females are wider.
And by the way, ignorance is no excuse. But the good news is, there's no really good news. I want to see this change, because, like Marlo said, 50% is a problem, because if you're taking just the males, pretty soon there's more females down there than there should be.
Right. And, a typical response of a declining male population is that males tend to get smaller and smaller.
Yeah, yeah.
And the mating success with a larger female is going to be
more difficult.
Lower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So that being said, and that's why I want one more thing I want to finish on, is scientists supports that when you do drop these things, they live. But why would you want to do that? So would there be... I know how difficult it is to undo something that's been done, right?
Right.
So in other words, I hope that there's enough interest, legislative interest, even though the legislature is done for this year, at the June meeting, that they can learn something and maybe, if not eliminate, certainly modify.
Right.
You know.
And that 2006-2007 legislation that led to this no take of female was actually geared towards spiny lobsters and Kona crab and Samoan crab, white crabs, I believe, was just added into
that.
They
just got lumped into it.
Yep,
right?
Got lumped.
Oh, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Marlo, thank you very much. We'll see you next time. And if you got an idea, or if you want something heard on the program, first of all, you're going to go to wpcouncil.org and learn more about this June Fisher meeting coming up. I'll tell you I can be a part of that. Also, you got to let everybody know that wpcouncil.org, there's a lot of stuff on there that you can share. Go learn about this stuff a little bit. So for everybody at the program, thanks for listening. See you next time. Aloha.